Minor with my colleague Mildred Menlo interviewing Mr. William Block on August the 11th for the National Council of Jewish Women Oral Hills History Project. Okay, we are wondering about your involvement in community organizations.
Well, I've been involved in a number of them. When I got back after World War II, shortly thereafter, there was quite a division on the Pittsburgh Symphony Board. There was the group that favored Fritz Reiner and the people who were very much in favor of Eddie Spector, and Spector and Reiner didn't get along. And so each side was trying to get board members and didn't know exactly where you stood on it, and of course I knew nothing about the struggle that was going on. But Mrs. Bramer, who was very much in Fritz Reiner's corner, came to see me and asked me if I'd go on the board, and I went on the board. And I stayed on the board, I guess, 40-some years, and then I decided it was time to retire. And I think I'm probably the only person who stayed in Pittsburgh who retired from the Symphony Board. Most of them stay on until either they leave town or die. But I resigned about 5 years ago, and I'm not sorry about that. I think that 40 years is long enough.
Do you have any comments that you could share with us about the symphony and the symphony you're involved?
Well, I'm a strong supporter of symphony music, and you know I'm very anxious to see the Pittsburgh Symphony maintained as a first-rate outfit. It's very difficult in this day and age. Ticket prices can't be raised easily. And the costs just rise inexorably. So, you know, they're now out after $70 million of endowment to get an income roughly of $3.5 million from that endowment, which would take care of their present deficit, not perhaps even future deficits. So I'm not even sure. I don't know what the solution is. There's a lot of turmoil about symphony orchestras around the United States and how they can be supported. And I'm not sure what the solution is for these larger orchestras, the top rank orchestras like Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, New York, Boston, and Cleveland, Chicago. Shouldn't leave out Chicago. Very fine one. There are some very difficult times ahead, and I don't know exactly what the solution is. Going back to other organizations, shortly after I got back, not too long after, Elmer Trautman had come to town. And succeeded, can't think of her name this moment. She was a very strong director of the Federation of Social Agencies. Elmer came to town, and I accepted the job of heading up a committee that studied,
You were talking about Elmer Trautman.
Oh, yes, and I was asked to head up a committee to study the Lawrenceville, I forget what it was called at that time, but it was a combination daycare center and bathhouse for itinerants, truck drivers, what have you. The cities in the old days had a lot of those bathhouses because people didn't have a ready place to watch and so forth. So I headed up that committee, and we recommended that the bathhouse be terminated, but that the daycare center be continued, something of that nature. A little bit later, Elmer Trautman and H.J. Hines II, Jack Hines, came to see me and asked me if I would head up a committee to study the Federation of Social Agencies and what might be done to get more citizen participation. The Federation had been attacked as being dominated by executives of the agencies, and that the rest of the population was not really represented, and I think probably they meant those who contribute weren't really represented. So the result of all that was a study which ended up recommending what became the Health and Welfare Association, later changed to Health and Welfare Planning Association, later name. And the Health and Welfare Association, I having led the study, I was asked if I would become the first president. And so that evolution took place, and we got some very good people on the board. I went to some of the companies in town and asked them to assign or give me a name of a young executive who they thought was going to rise to the top. And Mellon Bank gave me the name of Curtis Jones, who then was in their commercial department, who later became president of Mellon Bank. And Bob Milsom, Pittsburgh National, they gave me his name, and he was at that time, I think, in their commercial department. He later became president of PNB. So they did very well by me. I mean, we got some very good people on that board, and they took it quite seriously. And we had first a citizen group, and then a board chosen from that citizen group. And I think that certainly in those first years, we did some important work. We even closed an agency, which is almost impossible.
Which one?
You know, I forget now. It had to do with housing. But it was very weak. And later, of course, Action Housing was started under the aegis of the Allegheny Conference and was a very successful and very useful agency. But the one that we closed up was purely theoretical and accomplished very little. Anyway, as a result of my having headed that up, and Elmer Trautman was the guiding light of all of this. I mean, you know, what I knew about health and welfare, you could put in a thimble, and he was really a very, not only a competent executive, a man who knew how to handle boards and how to prepare for board meetings and all of that, which is an important science, and not too many people are good at it. Elmer was superb. It was superb. He was superbly tactful in his handling of people, his relationships, and he also was a very clear thinker on a lot of these problems. So he was an ideal executive, and that took most of the burden off anybody who was an officer. As a result of that, Joe Barr, Mayor Barr, asked me if I would chair a committee on, it was in connection with urban redevelopment. Apparently, when you filed with the federal government plans for your physical redevelopment, you had to also file a social plan of what your areas in the social area was, what you were going to do. And I said to Joe Barr, you know, although I've been president of the Health and Welfare Association, I'm not sure that I'm competent to handle this job. He said, well, we have a young man in the mayor's office I think could be quite helpful to you. And that turned out to be Mo Coleman. And Mo Coleman is another remarkable fellow in that field. And he did it almost all the work. We had a huge committee. It was a very difficult committee because whenever the mayor has to appoint a committee, he has to remember all of the different areas to be represented, all of the that he isn't doesn't show a sex bias or a racial bias. And so it was a huge committee, very hard to handle, and an awful lot of paperwork sent out. But Mo Coleman was terrific, and we filed a plan on the deadline of when it was for which it was requested, and from that experience, I was asked by Al Tronzo, who was head of the Public Housing Authority at that time, if I would go on the Relocation Advisory Committee, people being relocated in the city because of a variety of things, the reconstruction of the Lower Hill, all sorts of things going on, and people who could least afford it were being pushed out or relocated because of economic change. And Dan Pietragallo was head of the relocation agency at that time. That was before he became head of the Housing Authority. I became concerned about the fact that the Housing Authority was beginning a transition from a mix of people, a racial mix, and that it was gradually going all black. And the concern I had, and several other people, I wasn't the only one, obviously, that this would also affect the schools in the area where the housing, whatever housing community there was, like Northview Heights or any of these. And the concern about what was going to happen in the school, because we were all talking about desegregation, and here was something that was leading to segregation. And so Al Tronzo was very sensitive to this, and he tried very hard to try to maintain some kind of mix. But the pressure was so great in the community at that time for blacks to get decent housing, and these public housing communities were a lot better than an awful lot of the places they were living in. It was just impossible to hold the line. I mean, the pressure, the number of applicants, it couldn't be done. And politically, it was impossible. And so, you know, the fight was lost. I shouldn't say a fight, the effort, the desire to try to keep those communities having a mix of people didn't happen, couldn't happen. And that, of course, led to a lot of trouble in the school system. And I felt so sorry for the president of the school board at that time, Mrs. Arendt, and what she went through with the kind of disruption of school board meetings and all of that. What did she have to gain? She was giving her services to the public, and she was quite experienced in school matters. And she was really battered and bruised as a result of that experience. They came in. Louis Hayden, it seems to me, was the leader of a group that just raised the dickens in those school board meetings. And she sat there and accepted it. I wouldn't have. I would have called the police and closed the thing. I mean, it was impossible to conduct business. But, you know, that was all a part of that period, and it was a very difficult period. But that isn't that doesn't tell you what I've done. I was on that relocation committee for quite a while, and then apparently the need for that kind of work declined, and there wasn't the same amount of construction or destruction of housing. Although, to read recently what John Bull wrote in the Post Gazette, a series on slum landlord, there's an awful lot of housing that ought to be destroyed in this city, and some decent housing built. I hope not projects. I hope scattered housing would be the solution, but that's more expensive. What else? I don't have a list of. You probably can get from my assistant here a list of things that
she gave us, a list of the boards that you had belonged
to.
But that doesn't tell inside.
But those are some of the main things that I got involved in. I've been on the sponsoring committee, the Allegheny Conference, but that's meaningless. It's the executive committee that does the work, and I've never been on the executive committee. And I'm sure they wouldn't want a newspaper man on there, because they have to discuss too many things among themselves. And so I've been on that sponsoring committee, which is largely a public relations gimmick that's not very meaningful. I was active in before it was dissolved, or in the Regional Planning Association, which did a lot of the planning for the Allegheny Conference back in the 50s and 60s. And so that was an interesting area. What else? Gateway to Music has been something that's been very close to my heart. I don't know why I didn't think of it before this. Back about in the early 60s, I think, I was approached by a couple of the musicians at the Pittsburgh Symphony about organizing a little a corporation that could receive monies, a 501c3 organization, because they wanted to play. These were string players, and they wanted to play in schools. And Sidney Cohen was one of the people who approached me, and Sidney was a good friend of Jack Hines, and he talked to Jack Hines, and Jack Hines said, sure, we'll give you $5,000. So they needed a vehicle for that. So they asked me if I would be an incorporator with Stan McCaskey, who at that time was at Allegheny Ludlum, I think, as a lawyer, and he was going to set this up and I would be one of the incorporators. I said, fine. Then they came back to me after it was incorporated and said, would I go on the board? And I said, sure. And pretty soon I found that I was the president of the board. And we started to raise a little bit more money than the Heim's amount, so that they could organize, and they charged the schools a modest amount. And we approached Sidney Marland about it, who was then superintendent of schools, I believe he was superintendent by then. And Marland liked the idea, and so we made a contract with the city of the city schools to play, I think, all of the grade schools and maybe some of the high schools. And this started off with a string quartet. And then gradually, we had another string quartet. Alan Scher, I think, headed up a second one. And we went ahead, we got a woodwind quintet and a brass quintet. And then we contracted later with the ballet and had a ballet demonstration. And it's gradually expanded into not just music, but performing arts. Who is the great mime in town?
Dan.
Hmm?
Dan Kamen.
Dan Kamen. He does work for us. And very good. He's marvelous. So, Dan, that's right. Dan Kamen. And so anyway, I was on the board. I'm now emeritus, which a good friend of mine years ago, George Craig, a lawyer, said emeritus, E in Latin is out, and meritus, you deserved it.
That's wonderful.
So anyway, I'm emeritus. The head of it is, the president of the board is now Dale Hershey, a lawyer. Of course, Sidney Cohen's widow, Fanny Cohen, ran it for years. And she and I used to meet on Sunday mornings or whenever she and I were both free and settle whatever problems there were. And she was a wonderful person to work with, and she did a fine job. And we raised not a huge amount of money, but always enough to do this. And we began to send groups out beyond Allegheny County to Mercer County and farther east and so forth. And I think it was a very good project, and it still is a good project. Fanny, of course, is retired. Mary Goodman is now the executive, and it's still going well. It's a little harder today to get corporate contributions to small organizations, and so. The struggle for support is tougher than it was. For instance, years ago, if you got on the U.S. Steel Foundation list, it just the check came in every year without question. You hardly had to write and ask for it. They just had a list of things that they gave to. Well. You know, as things got a little tougher, they began to review, and they could see what they set up their priorities, and unfortunately, the small organization is a low priority, so we no longer get U.S. X Foundation money. So those are some of the problems that is. But Gateway has survived quite well. I think gives somewhere close to 400 services a year during the school year, does a lot more in-depth work with schools, actually going in for a certain amount of training and so forth. The school systems are not as fond of just coming in and giving a performance. They want something in greater depth. And Gateway is, Mary Goodman is very, very intent on doing that. Demonstrations and helping students and so forth.
I've attended many of them. The children thoroughly enjoy them.
Oh, yeah.
They learn.
Love them.
They're always a teaching situation because somebody explains ahead of time what
yes.
is going on.
Yes.
And the children are captivated.
And they learn about the instruments.
That's right.
That's right. Yes. It's, you have to go see a performance like that. Our percussion group is fantastic. And you go there and see the kids come up and help with all the different percussion instruments. And the rapture on those faces when these good musicians are playing, it's wonderful to watch. Well, and you know, organizations like that are more needed today than they were some years ago because the schools are not doing as much music education and that kind of work. They have all they can do to concentrate on the three R's. And, well, we won't get into all the school problems. But
yeah, you're budget. Talking to a just recently retired school teacher. So.
Well, you know the budget problems and all of that. Let's see. Gateway, of course, was very close to my heart for many years. I can't. Trying to think what other organizations have really taken a good deal of time. And those are the ones I think that are uppermost.
As your priority.
And, you know, I've been on a lot of boards, but I'm on the board now of the Historical Society, and I'm very excited about their effort to set up this History Center. I think that'll be very interesting. And I think that John Herbst, the director who came in 4 or 5 years ago, has been absolutely remarkable in what he's been able to accomplish. With the help of several board members who have devoted a great deal of time and effort, especially Bill King, who formerly was with Gulf and who's retired now and has spent endless hours working and helping John Herbst accomplish what they've accomplished, and they've accomplished miracles. I mean, I never thought the sleepy Historical Society could suddenly go out and raise the kind of money that Bill King and John Herbst have raised. They've had a lot of help, don't misunderstand me, but they've been the spark plugs in this. It's been absolutely...
So it's going to come off, then. They have their property down in the Strip District?
Yes. They bought an old ice house, you know, I think the reconstruction of it is underway. It's supposed to open, I think, in 95. It could be the end of 94, but I think it's 95. I'm not positive of that. What else? We want to talk about the Post-Gazette, do we?
Yes, yes, yes.
Business life.
Well, our family first got involved in the Post-Gazette in 1927. William Randolph Hearst had made a deal with the Oliver family to buy the Gazette Times and the Chronicle Telegraph. He had a tentative deal, but he didn't want to buy those without getting the Post and the Sun and combining papers. And Mr. Braun, Arthur Braun, was the trustee of an estate that owned the Post and the Sun. Mr. Braun would spend the morning at his bank, which later became part of Union Trust and Mellon, but at that time was an independent bank, and he would spend the afternoon at the Sun. But he wouldn't sell the Hearst. So my father did a lot of business with Hearst. My father represented a lot of Hearst newspapers for the sale of national advertising. Hearst had a number of cities where he had two newspapers. For instance, in Chicago, he had the Morning Herald Examiner and the Evening American. Well, the Evening American was represented by Hearst Advertising Service, which was his own. And he wanted another organization to compete. And so my father represented the morning paper, the Herald Examiner. In New York, the Hearst had the New York Journal.
End of tape 7, side 1, to be continued.
The New York American. So he was doing a lot of business with Hearst at that time. And Hearst came to him and said, why don't you buy the Post and the Sun? And then